Shares.
Market.
The S&P.
The ASX.
Stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that likes to celebrate success, but remembers that pride cometh before a fall. I'm Andrew Page, and with me, as always, is Scott Phillips.
G'day, fools. I'm the pride, he's the fall.
Isn't that the truth? What are we going to talk about today? Well, a couple of things. We want to talk about lessons from a 10-bagger.
10 what?
A 10-bagger. Oh. That's when you make 10 times your
right.
money. Yes,
okay.
Baba black sheep and all that kind of stuff. And we also talk a bit about how you know when to sell. It is, I think, a much more difficult question than knowing when to buy. So we'll dive into that as well. Scott.
Andrew, I'm excited about this podcast. We do lots of news stuff.
Yep.
And we do that for a good reason, right? There's lots of things that go on. And frankly,
never a dull
we know
moment.
Our listeners want to know about it. It fascinates us. Sometimes as enjoyable, as importantly, are some of the bigger issues, the bigger investment questions. And so we thought we'd focus this week on a couple of big ones that really do matter a lot, hopefully, for our listeners and certainly for investors at large.
Yeah, well, and the reason we thought we'd talk a bit about a 10-bagger, we're talking about Amazon a couple of weeks ago now.
We did.
And, you know, how phenomenally well that has been.
A 300-bagger for David Gardner.
A 300-bagger.
Motley Fool co-founder.
Oh, man. So we kind of thought, we've had a bit of success on our scorecards as well. A corporate travel management, I think it's a business we've mentioned before, just in the last week or so, it's crossed that threshold where it is up tenfold on the initial recommendation. I'd love to steal some credit for that, but that was all you, my friend. Well done.
You're a very kind man. Thank you.
But looking back at the time, we'll take this from a couple of different angles. When you first recommended it, was a 10-bagger something that you thought was a possibility?
Yeah, it's a really good point, Andrew. You know, 10-baggers are kind of this mythical thing that everyone wants, right? Mm. The idea of getting, it's a decimal thing. 10 times your money, put a zero on the end of it, invest 10 grand, you get 100 grand. Invest 100 grand, you get a million. It's kind of this nice
ka-ching.
Little,
yep.
Right, it's a nice little just mental kind of thing that we think about. And frankly, you know, so corporate travel, we recommended, the cost base of it now is $2.14. And last Thursday, across the $22 market, closed at $22 exactly.
How long ago? When you first bought?
Just under 5 years ago. August 2012, it was recommended.
Ten times in 5 years?
Yeah, we'll take that.
Yep.
So, look, you know, it's been a really good run.
Yep.
To your point, the question of, you know, did we expect it? Well, no, not at all. I mean, in the sense that not every stock you recommend, you only do if you think it's going to be a 10-bagger. You know, you're not specifically looking for just those ideas. We bought corporate travel management. We recommended it for our members specifically because we liked the long-term potential of the business. But not every company, and certainly you're not going to know in advance which ones are going to deliver those sort of results. So did I like the company a lot? Did I think it was a great company? Yes. Did I have high hopes for it over the long term? Mm-hmm. Yes. Did I expect to be a 10-bagger in less than 5 years? No, you could have knocked me out with a feather if you told me that in 2012.
Right. Okay. Well, let me ask you this before we sort of get into the things that we sort of look for when trying to get these kinds of things. Is this a consequence of their profit growing tenfold over a period, or is there other factors aside from that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. No, profit hasn't grown at tenfold over that period of time. In fact,
it's grown a bloody lot, though.
Well,
right?
And this is why it's a combination, right? So you think about it, the question is really what makes a great business and what makes a great investment, and they're kind of there's two components to any business, right? There's the business itself. There's the quality estimate, if you want to talk about, or the quality element, if you want to talk about, you know, the business itself, high quality business. The other thing you look at is the price of the business.
Yep.
And you combine the quality and the price, you get value. And we talk about that a lot. Mm. And so partly this was a case of a really great business doing really good things.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, it was at a price when we originally recommended it that it didn't require the business to do all that much. And so if it did do spectacularly well, and frankly, I didn't expect it to do this well, then we would have got a really nice result from that investment. So you get this nice combination, a quality business and a good price. That's a really, I mean, that's the holy grail of combination. Whenever you make a recommendation, whenever you buy a stock, you're hopefully looking for a business with good business potential and a business selling at a decent price. I think if you combine those together, you get a good result.
Yeah, and growth is so I don't care if you're an income investor, a value investor, whatever kind of investor you are, growth is so important. Not that you have to have growth to do well on investment. There's plenty of people out there who intentionally get into some things that they know are not good companies, but their price is just so screamingly low that you can still make a return on it. And that's an entirely justified approach. The lovely thing about growth is it does cover a lot of valuation sins. When something is growing very strongly, it means that you don't have to get that estimate of value that right because it just, you know, because it does two things. I mean, firstly, it means that you get obviously whatever lift you get from the rise in the earnings, but also because the market starts to notice it, and then it puts a premium on that. So you sort of get this leverage increase where earnings are growing very strongly, but what the market's prepared to pay for those earnings grows even more as well. So it's sort of this double whammy effect, which is just a beautiful thing.
It's a nice multiplier, right? So you get the profit growth and you get the rest. We should also say, Andrew, this is a really important, and I might make this point later, or I might make it now, but it's also a stock that we've recommended twice more since. So, an important part of this is not just that it was a lucky price at one point, or that it was a lucky quality at one point that then wasn't clear.
Yeah.
You know, so, yes, the original investment's up tenfold, but the second time we recommended, I think we're up threefold, or give or take, and the third time we recommended it not so long ago was up about 30 or 40%.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, you recommend a higher price. You can't capture those early gains just mathematically.
No.
But it's important to differentiate between either the lucky win back then or the fact that you had to be there at that point. Now, if you bought it on the original recommendation, and some of our long-term members did, you made a lot of money. That's been great. But plenty of members have bought the stock since then, either since the first buy, just simply because they joined later and said, oh, I'll buy that, I like it. Or when it was re-recommended a couple of times, they've said, you know what? That's a good idea. It's a good business, doing well, executing well. And in some of those cases, the price had already moved up, or had moved up, and the multiple had even expanded. But the future was still just as bright. The quality features were still there. And we thought there was big long-term potential. And that's proven so far, touch wood, to be the case.
I'll add another wrinkle to that. I would posit, in fact, I'd bet my left arm that there were people who bought at even a better price who didn't make nearly as much money. And the reason is because we all have this tendency to feel as though we need to, quote unquote, lock in a profit. So you buy something at a dollar, it goes to two. Hey, I've doubled my money. I'm a genius. And Lord knows I have done this. And you sell out thinking you're the smartest thing since Warren Buffett.
Yep.
Only to realize 3, 4, 5 years down the track that it was the worst possible mistake you could have made. And that, and this is the other point of this 10 bagger, this to your point, was that something that occurred over 5 years, which in hindsight is just a blink of the eye. But when you're sort of looking in the here and now and you're looking into the future, 5 years just seems an incredibly long amount of time away. So when things are going well, you stay with it. You know, why sell out and lock in a bit of a profit because you've anchored to some purchase price that looks cheap in retrospect?
Yep.
But it really makes no difference, right? It could be that something has gone up fivefold and is still cheap relative to its future potential.
Yeah, adding to win is something people don't do. You kind of look at that and say, well, okay, it was $2.15 or $2.14, whatever it was. When it gets to $4, oh, I've missed that. Yep. Bugger, I missed it. Okay, I'll leave it now. Or you say, well, I'll buy if it drops back to $1.90.
Yeah.
Or at $4, you say, well, it's too expensive now, but goes up to $3, then I'll buy.
Then I'll buy.
Now, if you, this is a $22 stock, right? If you'd bought it $4, you got more than a five bagger. You bought it $5, you've quadrupled your money. You bought it $10, you've doubled your money.
Yeah.
You bought it $15, you've still got a 50% gain.
Yeah.
I mean, none of these things should be ignored or avoided. But people who looked at it and went, oh, it's too expensive, it's already gone up, I'll get the next one.
Yeah.
You know, missing that opportunity has been a really, really big costly mistake for those who did. And as you said, or if you saw that along the way and said, oh, I've already made my money now, I'll get out. I'm a smart guy, I've done that job.
Yeah.
I think we can really obsess over the short-term movements of share prices. And I think that's a real mistake looking at that saying, well, maybe it's a sell, maybe I should hold, maybe I should whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we obsess over the losers and we kind of ignore the winners.
Yeah.
I think we learn the wrong lessons that way.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. So I think that's a key.
I think there's also a penny wise, pound foolish type thing where people will maybe get
small
over
F foolish.
Yes, small F, not the big F foolish. when you sort of maybe you get over some of those behavioral hurdles and you think, look, it was 90 cents, now it's $3. I still want to buy it, but you know what? I'm not going to just go out into the market and buy it. I'm going to put a limit order in or something. I'm going to put it at $2.95.
Right.
I don't want to pay $3. I want to pay $2.95. And look, I get it. You've got to put a line in the sand somewhere. You know, you do have to have an eye on value. But honestly, I often say to members that if this thing is going to go well, when you look back in 5 years' time, are you really going to care that you bought it at $2.95 or $3?
Yeah.
It's not going to make or break. Even if this turns out to be the worst investment in the world and this is 50 cents in 5 years' time, again, whether you bought it at $2.95 or $3, you've still taken a bath, right?
And more importantly, you look at corporate travel management, 10-bagger, right? So tenfold return. If you could have bought another 9 companies that went completely stone, motherless, broke, and you still would have broken even.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, if you think about that in terms of the risk and reward, David Gardner, again, we talked about him with Amazon, you know, says the most you can lose in any investment is 100%.
Yeah.
The most you can gain is theoretically unmeasurable, but in any real sense is multiples of that. So if you can make 200, 300, 400, 500%, but only lose 100%, and if you believe in that company's future, the sheer range of outcomes already tilts it in your favor if you think it's a high quality business. And we do. And that's a really important part of the thesis as well.
Yeah. I think too, just on that, in terms of pricing, it's all about looking forward, and it's always about having a reasonably clear idea of what this thing is. Well, we're also informed by the market and the share price. We look it up, we log into our brokerage account, we see that it's trading at $2.57.5 or whatever it happens to be.
Yep.
And we think, oh, well, that's, you know, kind of what it is. You know, well, it was $3 before, so therefore that's cheap. And it's kind of got nothing, and I mean nothing, to do with what's happened previously.
Exactly.
It's about forgetting that market price, and it's about saying, well, here's a business.
For God's sake, don't look at the chart.
Don't, oh, for God's sake. Let's do that another day, because right. That's a rant that you and I can go on for a long time.
That'll be a
time.
Special half-hour episode.
And I look forward to all the hate mail that we will receive in the aftermath of that.
H-P-A-D-E.
But what I'm saying is here is that you look at this as though it was just a private business.
Yep.
Here's what they're making. I reckon they can probably make this. You know what? I would pay X dollars for that based on what the future holds.
Totally.
And that, it's got nothing to do with whether it was worth $1 or $10 or $1 million last week. So I think when you've got that focus on the future, yep. It helps you make much more sensible decisions in the here and now. If something's at $3 and you think that, geez, I would happily pay $5 for this or $4 for this.
Right.
And you've got this huge margin of safety, and your estimates are always going to, by the way, the best of the best of the best analysts in the world, their forecasts and their valuations are always going to be wrong.
Yep.
But it's about being roughly right as opposed to specifically wrong.
Yep.
And so that's another thing I think in focus on. And it comes back to that idea of, well, as averaging up, as the business improves, maybe it grows more than you think. Maybe it starts to get stronger. Those qualities that you talked about improve. And then you sort of think over time, actually, this is worth more than I thought. And therefore, I'm happy to buy more of it.
Now, speaking of which, man, I want to do a little bit on quality, because we talked a lot about price.
Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about what we saw with corporate travel. That in hindsight, it's easy to say, well, I knew it was going to happen. And we didn't know it was going to be this great, right? But the preconditions were there for it to be a successful investment. Mm. And the reason was it was a quality business in the first place. Let me tick a couple of them off.
Okay.
The first is run by a founder owner.
So we love founder owners.
Right, we do. And so Jamie Ferris, CEO, deserves all the praise in the world. He built this business from scratch. Him and a couple of people originally in an office building in Brisbane back in the day.
Quite a bit of a large shareholding themselves, which always helps sharpen the focus.
Correct. He's run it for 25 years, listed for 5 or 6 years, I think, maybe a bit longer, maybe. Mm. You know, so owned the business, ran the business like his own, really high quality guy, expressed that with, for example, doing some rights issues, which gave every individual shareholder the right to participate rather than feeling like, you know, it was only institutions that were offered the money. So really fair founder owner looking after shareholders.
Big tick.
He solved a real need. This is a great business because it helps other businesses save money. It's one thing to say, spend your money, buy my product, because it's going to be great for you. You're going to love it.
Mm.
That's one way to do it.
Yep.
If you say to a business, look, use my product, pay me a fee, and you will still come out ahead.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer, right?
You're a problem for
you. You're solving a real problem, and you're saving the money because they're paying you a fee.
Mm.
They still save money.
Yeah.
That's a good place to be. Business to business, when you're helping them solve a problem they have, really good place to be.
Very good.
Thirdly, happy customers. When we recommended the company, it had won multiple Travel Agent of the Year, Corporate Traveler of the Year, Business Awards. Mm. You know, these guys had happy customers, good growth, really strong industry recognition. So we knew people liked them. People wanted to use their business. Fourthly, they were growing. And that was translating into growth.
Yep.
When you see a business already growing, when it's got happy customers, when it's got it's doing the right things the right way, that's a really nice place to be.
Mm.
And last, a really solid balance sheet. It wasn't going to get itself in trouble with debt. In fact, when it's done, its acquisitions mostly use a bit of cash, some shares, very little debt on the way through. Mm. So taking very little risk with shareholders' money, making sure that it's conservative, but still getting the job done, and a really great internal workplace culture.
Yeah.
And those things, you know, it's easy, again, looks easy in hindsight. These were exactly the things we saw at the time that have remained true. And frankly, these are some of the reasons we felt good about recommending it a second and a third time, because it's a quality business that was just getting it done.
I guess the other thing I would ask you here, I haven't followed it as closely as you, but I would imagine, given like any share that's ever existed ever, that did not go up in a straight line.
Exactly.
So there would have been plenty of times, probably even when you first recommended it, that it could have been down 10, 15, whatever percent, you know, shortly after. I think that always tests your faith. It's easier to be strong-willed when things are all going your way.
Yeah.
And even along, even if it did go up at immediately, maybe it went from... What'd you say you bought it at?
$2.14.
So maybe $2.14. It was at, you know, $4 a couple of years later, and then from $4 it went back to $3. Right. You know, it's like a 25% fall. Exactly. That will scare you out as well.
And there's been a fair chunk of at least 10 or 15% falls over time. I have to say, I remember a time when it went from $14 to $12, and it went from 20 to 18. Yeah, you know, there's been lots of times when the price has fallen back, and you think, oh, she missed the chance.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that kind of stuff is always going to be the case.
Mm.
Share market volatility will always be with you, even with the best quality companies. the ones that have been successful. We talked about David Gardner and Amazon last week, or week before, sorry, I should say. There are times when your faith is tested.
Mm.
But again, it's about separating the market price response from the company's underlying performance. And when the underlying performance has been good, there's every reason to say this too shall pass.
Look, it's not all about corporate travel. We just want to talk about this to sort of take those broader lessons and then so we can apply them elsewhere. And hopefully it has been of help.
I'm going to throw one last one, Andrew. I know you want to move on, but I want to throw one more, which is simply luck. You know, we can stand here and pretend that we're
Isn't it? It's luck when it doesn't go well. It's skill when it goes well, my friend.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. So that's you know, like honestly, you know, was it obviously, as you asked when we first started, was it obviously a 10-bagger from day one? No, of course it was.
Well, you've got to put your, you know, borrow it up to the eyeballs and put everything into it.
Right.
For sure.
And frankly, I've made other recommendations that have gone badly. So, you know, this is not to say that the process always works at 100% in your favor with every single recommendation. Trying to put the right things in your favor, which I think we've just been through.
Mm.
And when they're in your favor, they're going to work out more often than not. But was it luck that I found it at that price? Was it luck that I'd seen it that day?
Mm.
You know, yes, of course it was. And so, you know, we always need to make sure that in both good and bad outcomes, there is simply always going to be an element of luck. And we're not full of hubris to the point where we're going to say, it's obviously us and we're great and we're wonderful people. Yeah, we try and do the right things. We try and tick the right boxes. And after that, there's still some element of luck left and just have to ride that. And sometimes you'll do well, sometimes you'll do badly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do the right things enough times, the odds will turn out in your favor.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
We've talked a lot about the positive. Let's talk about the negative. And, mate, I can tell you it hasn't been a good run for me of late. A couple of recommendations we made have just been slammed. We just fortunately got in front of a couple of things that we didn't see coming. Frankly, the market didn't see coming. Just to share some of the blame there. You know, it happens, right?
I've been there plenty of times myself.
And so you look yourself in the mirror and you think, well, what do I do? I've got a couple of options here. I can sell, got it wrong, and get the hell away. Or
It hurts. I'm going away.
I'm going away. You know, like it's gone down. It could go down further. We've seen that with plenty of companies where, you know, it goes down 50%. It goes down to 50% again after that.
Yep.
Or is this, in fact, what you want to see? I mean, you ask anyone, hey, what would you do if share prices dropped 50%? Everyone's like, I'd buy like crazy. But none of us do.
Yep.
So it's about trying to tease those two apart. So we wanted to ask the question, when things don't go well, when is the time to sell?
Yeah. I think it's a really good point. The first thing is you need to be really honest with yourself. You know, it's easy to say either, oh, I'm a bloody idiot, or oh, the market's wrong, or oh, I got this right, or whatever it is.
It's less likely to admit you're an idiot, frankly. There's a lot of mechanisms that we have to protect our ego.
Correct.
You know, so you want to blame others. Yeah, you really have to be honest. Yeah.
Now, you tell me, mate, what are some of the conditions you would use to decide whether some of those stocks that are down are worth getting rid of, or whether you should be hanging on?
It goes back to why you bought the thing in the first place.
Yep.
It's always a good idea. In fact, it's an essential idea. When you buy something, you want to know what you're buying and why you are buying it. And you want to write that down, frankly.
We call that an investment thesis.
An investment thesis.
So what do we expect to happen and why?
I want to have an argument that I can put to someone that is hopefully fairly objective, well-grounded in fact. This is what I expect to happen. And that's important because not only does it clarify your thinking, but it means that as the future begins to unfold, you can compare these new facts with what you expected. So it might have been because, hey, we thought this business was probably going to grow at around about 10% per year for the next few years.
Yep.
First set of results come out and it's like, ooh, geez, not even close to that.
Mm-hmm.
Next set of results come out, ooh, it's still... And then you can sort of say, it gives you a very good referral to sort of say, well, clearly I was wrong.
Yep.
This has not grown how I thought. I need to reevaluate things.
Particularly
here.
Where the circumstances that lead to that low growth aren't things that you can reasonably expect are short term in nature.
Yeah, I think that's the other point as well. I think in analyst land, in spreadsheet land, everything is to 12 decimal places.
Right.
And we like to think that, you know, we have a really good idea as to what's going to be the next 6 month, quarterly, yearly result, whatever it is. Well, we're never going to know, right? It's about being realistic. I mean, businesses dealing in a chaotic world, right?
Yep.
You've got the smartest CEO, you've got the best product, and there are a multitude of factors that impact on that. So that for me, I think one of the questions to ask here is this disappointment what you might call structural, or is it what you might call cyclical?
And here's two examples. So last week we talked about Channel 10. Channel 10 has been in a pretty much consistent nosedive time after time after time because there are structural issues facing that industry. Simply, viewers are going somewhere else, advertisers are going somewhere else, they're not getting the dollars in through the door. Yes. There's nothing cyclical about the structural change to media.
It's not part of the ups and downs of the economic cycle. The industry landscape is changing structurally.
Correct. On the flip side, Cochlear had a product recall back in the day, a couple of years ago, I want to say now. Mm-hmm. It fell from $88 to $50, give or take.
A little bit above, but
it's now back to $120. Mm. And that was a one-off recall that, yes, in a different universe, might have been catastrophic for the organization, but was probably going to be one-off. Yep. Yes, it incurred some costs. Yes, it hurt sales in that particular period and the one after while they made good on the problems.
Yeah.
But then they came back and said, well, okay, we got through that. Now we're back on our usual growth trajectory. Yep. And that was, if not cyclical, it was a one-off one. You could look through and say, well, okay, this isn't going to break the business. It's not going to break the brand. It's not going to break the
hugely disappointing. I mean, obviously, very disappointing.
Right. And so there are two very different scenarios there. Where in one case, you're saying this is not indicative of something that's going to turn around quickly.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you can look at Cochlear and say this is a one-off that we think is a reasonable chance of working through. They did, and they're off to the races.
Yeah. I'll give you a real life example. One of the ones that we've had a bit of misfortune with, RCG Group. These guys are Athlete's Foot, Hype DC. They're shoe retailers. And I think there's two parts to it here. There's one, there's the normal cyclicality of retail. You know, for whatever reason, the latest $400 pair of sneakers didn't sell too well, and that happens. And so you get these sort of vagaries of retail, which I think you need to be relatively sanguine about. And you need to be realistic about when you get involved with these companies. The CEO himself is not going to be able to forecast next year's earnings, not with any degree of accuracy, because he doesn't know what retail conditions are going to be
right.
like. So you accept that lumpiness. On the other side of things, you've also got a structural, or potentially structural play here as well. We've talked a lot about Amazon. It's coming to Australia. Are a lot of people going to start buying their shoes online now? It's definitely a possibility. We've seen those trends playing out. So you've sort of got to tease apart these two things here and sort of say, look, at the end of last year, they said that they expected to earn X dollars. Mm-hmm. They came out after a pretty soft period after Christmas, and geez, retail's been a bit harder than we thought, so we've pulled things back. Not long ago, they pulled things back again. Now, this is all before Amazon's even come here. Yes, it's well before. So this is all, I think, what you would probably call cyclical kind of factors.
Yep.
Did the market like it? It did not like it. Very disappointed in it. Did we like it? Absolutely not. Share price really took a bath there. But then again, is this business still likely to be around in 5 years' time? Is it still likely to see an improvement in earnings? And that's the question to really answer. If it turned out that you came to a view that, no, actually, this is the new normal. Things are going to continue in this way. It doesn't really matter how cheap the share price is. Remember Slater and Gordon? Mm. They were just the darling of the market, you know, and just going from strength to strength to strength. Then they got into some real trouble, and really serious trouble. And so, you know, the balance sheet was very shaky. And this was a question of, even though the share price continually to look, in retrospect, very cheap compared to where it was before,
yep.
it was actually still very expensive and was always likely to get worse.
Right.
So it's a matter of teasing apart those two things. Another point I would say in terms of knowing when to sell or whether to buy more is forget about this nonsense of trying to pick the bottom. Mm. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen any of the great long-term investors out there pick the bottom ever.
Yep.
It's about, you mentioned Cochlear before. I'll do a bit of a victory lap here.
Mm.
I was buying with my ears pinned back, but I was doing it in the 60s, right?
Mm.
And I did, and then it kept on going down, and it kept on going down. Percentage-wise, it was pretty brutal. And then it languished there for, you know, what... In hindsight, it doesn't feel like it was that long. At the time, these are month after month after month of big flashing red negative on your portfolio.
Mm.
All of the press telling you why you're an idiot. if you've recommended it, all of your members and clients telling you that you're an idiot as well. and fair enough, you know, I get that. But so what, right?
Yeah,
as long as the price you paid was of reasonable value...
Yep.
Then, you know, selling is absolutely the wrong thing to do there. You don't have to pick the top and pick the bottom to do well here.
We're almost out of time, Andrew. So let me just run through a really quick 5-step checklist I look for when it comes to when to sell. The first is I would sell when I make a mistake. If I made a mistake, I've got to say, you know what?
Not a mistake with timing, a mistake with
the business analysis. Correct. Simply, I thought the business was going to do X, it did Y, and wasn't going to ever get back to X. And so I just simply made a fundamental analytical mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, when the unexpected happens, sometimes stuff happens just outside the expectation. There's company fraud. There's a new competitor. There's something that happens. It simply is not, you couldn't have possibly foreseen it. But equally, once it happens, you've got to say, okay, well, that does fundamentally change what I expect. Thirdly, I should say, when one of your known risks materializes, RCG, you gave the example, Amazon coming to Australia is a risk. It's a known risk.
Yep.
Now, if that becomes problematic and does start to eat away at that business, you're going to have to say, well, I knew it might happen. It did happen. Okay, so now it's time simply to sell. It's it's probabilistically, we invest probabilistically.
Yeah, don't be pig-headed.
Right, we invest knowing there's certain things that could happen that could hurt us. And if they come to pass, we simply say, okay, they came to pass, let's go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a risk-free investment. You have to know the risks and then respond to them.
Yep.
Fourthly, if the company is significantly overvalued, we talked a lot about price and times you shouldn't be scared away.
Right.
If you've got a company that's trading on a million times earnings, and those earnings aren't going to grow at anywhere like the rate required to justify that price, then if the market gives you a great price to sell, then by all means sell.
Yeah.
Don't get too clever about selling at 380 when you think the company's worth 370. That's just stupid.
Yeah.
But if you think the company's worth $3 and the shares are trading for $10,
yeah,
then you know what? Unless you can look at it and say, actually, the market's right. If you still think it's worth $3, take your money off the table. Go and invest in something else. You're simply being offered a gift horse, right? Don't look it in the mouth.
Yeah, the idea is to hold forever, but you know, sometimes something's too good to be true, you take it, right?
Totally. And then lastly, simply when you've got a better place for your money. So
okay. We
would say sell rarely unless you have to. By the same token, if I gave you a great opportunity to make 100 times your money and you said, no thanks, I'd rather hang on to Fairfax shares.
Yeah, I'm a long-term investor. I don't want to do it. Yeah.
Exactly. So there are times when you simply should sell those shares.
Yep. Everything is relative.
Indeed.
Well, I hope that's been useful, Fools. A long couple of rants on the good and the bad. Before you go, remember, you can subscribe to us through iTunes.
And you should.
Or our favorite Android podcast app. And also visit motleyfool.com.au as well.
That's just fool.com.au, no motley at the beginning. Fool.com.au/MMM.
Nearly a test.
Fool.com.au/MMM. Leave the URLs to me, Andrew.
Hasn't been my day. Until next time, Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.